Elected to the Utah School Board in 2020, James Moss Jr. was elected to serve as the chair of the 15-member governing board. Jim Moss also serves the Uinta Basin State School Board member, representing teachers and students from both Uinta and Duchesne school districts. Jim Moss grew up in Orem, Utah. He graduated from Brigham Young University in political science and then from BYU Law School, where he worked in the Civil Rights Division for the Utah Attorney General's Office. Jim Moss also obtained a Doctor of Education degree from the University of Southern California. Jim and his wife, Lindsay, now live in Midway, where their five children have all attended Wasatch County Schools. I'm Steve Evans with News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL. Thank you for joining us. I met Jim first at the Uinta County Republican Convention, was quite impressed with his presentation, and had an opportunity to have him here on the radio to visit with the good people of the Uinta Basin. Welcome, Jim Moss.
Thank you, Steve. Great to be with you. Great to be here in Vernal, and always enjoy getting out in the basin. I'm in Wasatch, so it's not too far a drive, but it's great to be out here.
Yeah, it's not too far of a drive from Midway to here. Enjoyable?
It's pleasant, very pleasant drive.
Yeah.
I spent some time in L.A. You mentioned USC, so compared to L.A. freeways, this is a dream. It's beautiful
that,
out here.
That it is. The time that you spend here as our representative for the state school board, what do you feel are some of our needs that we have that the state school board could help us with here in Uinta and Duchesne counties?
Great question. I think there's some needs that are unique to the basin, to Uinta and Duchesne, and I've enjoyed working with Superintendent Woodford on a number of things. One of those is dialing back regulation, and Rick's had some great experience and input. He was in Wyoming before he came here. And as we talk about the burden we place on schools from the state board, we sometimes, I think rightfully, complain that the feds put too many burdens and strings on us, and then sometimes we turn right around and do the same things ourselves to our local districts. And Rick's been a real voice to say, hey, folks, why don't you dial back what you're doing at the state level, give us some more freedom, flexibility, autonomy at the local level, support us where we need it, but you pile so many strings on some of the things that you're doing that it ends up in a big ball of a mess at our desk, and instead of being able to go mentor teachers, spend time in the classroom, we're doing paperwork till we die. And so working with Rick, we've dialed back some things like reports, like the grant application process. There's things that we provide to some of the LEAs, the local education agencies, that spend so much time in paperwork preparation that it's not worth the money you get for the grant. And that's crazy, right?
Did you have support from other school board members when this was happening at the suggestion of our local school superintendent?
We have, and I actually kind of kicked it off with the former chair, Mark Huntsman, about a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And Rick Woodford's been a real strong voice. We've got charter directors. In fact, one of the locals here, Cassie Hayes, you may know Dr. Allen and Dixie Allen's daughter.
I know Cassie Hayes, so, and I know Dr. Allen real well.
You know them all. So,
and Dixie. Wonderful people.
Dixie was my predecessor here, and Cassie was on a working group that turned into a formal task force that I chaired when I became the chair. And she's one of those who said, you know, charter director, local, whether it's a small district like Uinta or a charter, you wear five or six hats, you're running around trying to do everything for everybody. And on top of that, you get this big snowball that starts at the federal government, cascades through the legislature to the state board and down to my level. And I don't have time to do the things that best serve the kids and the teachers, right? So both of them weighed in, and that perspective from the basin was really helpful. So we do have a broad group, some of them from, you know, Wasatch Front, folks from Jordan, Davis school districts. But I think it was especially those in the smaller areas that said, look, this is just punishing. So help us, free us up from that burden, and then support us in the things that are good for kids. So that was a big part, I think, of learning the needs of the basin. I think one of the other needs out here is really for connection. And I remember going to a Lincoln Day dinner, I think 3 or 4 years ago, and talking about the railroad, right, to get the minerals to where they need to go. And that's critical.
You're still upset by that, by the way.
I understand. And that's an absolute need. I mean, the federal government, that's above my pay grade to talk about minerals and coal, what the federal government's doing. But certainly,
that's a whole other subject.
It is, you know, and I support those candidates. They're going to try to do something about it at the federal level. But at our level, you know, that's critical here. But I also look at the opportunities that kids have in places like Alpine or Layton along the Wasatch Front, where you got Silicon Slopes going on, the medical field, financial technology, culture, a lot of things going on in there in the Wasatch Front area that maybe kids who are coming up through middle school and high school don't have access to. They can't go to a job sharing or an internship at like a Qualtrics. You know, that's a local Utah success right. story. And Ryan Smith owns the Jazz now. How many kids in Vernal get to do an internship at Qualtrics? Well, I've put together a group, and it includes actually Qualtrics and a number of other businesses, with local superintendents in some of these areas that are off the Wasatch Front. So I was talking to Jason Young about this in Duchesne, talking to Rick out here, and we're putting together a toolkit. My day job is labor and employment law. So during COVID, I helped a lot of my clients adjust to remote learning. And my job was to help them figure out things like wages and oversight, termination, disability accommodation. But as you watch that, you thought, okay, they're adjusting. They're figuring out ways to do work from home, work from somewhere else. You can dial it in from a small town where you can have that small town quality of life and yet work in San Francisco, right? Mm-hmm. Big city. Our education system didn't work as well remotely. And I was one that was against the closure, and I was very happy when we reopened and got kids back to school. But in the middle there, this question of work-based learning for students, there's an opportunity, I think, to tap into job shadowing, following people around. Instead of following on the factory floor, you're in a Zoom meeting with people that are having creative ideas about how to build a product.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And so instead
of Utah State University does that here. They're connected with rural campuses throughout the state of Utah. Mm-hmm. And so through our concurrent enrollment program, students can participate in that remotely, even if the professor isn't here. In the Uinta Basin, but they're mature enough, I think, that they can handle that and are disciplined enough to participate in it.
It's a huge benefit, but there are things that kids can do at a younger age that maybe not are full kind of college prepping to work situation, but exploration. And I was with a teacher in another somewhat rural area. Doug Welton is a representative from Payson or Santaquin.
Okay.
And I dropped in to visit with him, and he said, while you're here, why don't you take over my class for an hour? So I taught a little bit of U.S. history. I teach political science at UVU.
Did you? It was good.
Yeah. So he let me just kind of have free reign. But at the end, I always ask the kids, right? I mean, we're sort of the fishermen, and occasionally you get to ask the fish what they're biting on and what they want.
That's good. From the students it's a and pretty the parents.
Good, right. Yeah. Good opportunity to ask the folks we're trying to serve, hey, what did you wish we had done better? And so I'm asking these kids, and I'm saying, I wish we had been exposed to more opportunities, more creative options, know what grownups are doing. Back in middle school, and we do some of this. Our state has a good program here. But what I saw was missing was this remote capacity to be exposed to different opportunities that maybe are not in your backyard. And so if you're out in the basin, can you tap into a Qualtrics? You're not going to be running a project for them at age 15, but you can do some things, you can learn, and you can do it from your laptop at the kitchen table. And so if you're not close enough to get in there and say, hey, how are these people making this Qualtrics business, you can Zoom in, and we're putting a toolkit right now to do exactly that. So our two local superintendents here in the basin are both going to be part of that. I've been recruiting people from med tech to software to cultural stuff and finance. They're coming together actually next month to talk about what that looks like. How can you make a good, solid educational opportunity for the student and give the business the opportunity remotely to kind of expand? Hey, we're doing some cool stuff here. Who would like to learn about it? Maybe you'll end up taking a job from us.
Make sure that rural schools are included in that.
Oh, they are the heart of it.
Because
that's right.
Because by rural, I don't mean just Cache County and Washington County. I mean Uinta, Duchesne, Sevier.
Yeah.
Grand County, those school kids, they have the same opportunity that the students in Park City School District have, or in Alpine, or maybe even in Washington School District. That we have those opportunities. Do you feel that those opportunities are present? You mentioned things that are on the horizon coming. Do we have those opportunities now for our students here in Uinta and Duchesne counties?
The remote option currently is very sporadic, if it exists at all. And again, I thought of that when I came here to Lincoln Day Dinner 4 or 5 years ago. That's literally at the time I was doing labor law, and I thought, you know, I hope they get the railroad. But man, it would be cool if we tapped them into these companies along the Wasatch Front. So it was literally designed with that in mind. And I started the process of pulling this project together. Talent Ready Utah and our state office personnel have been now helping to bring it to life. But we're just now in the process where we're getting this toolkit. But you're right. To your point, this was not made for districts like Park City. It was made specifically with Uinta and Duchesne. And frankly, the west side of Salt Lake. You got some folks out there in the urban settings.
right,
who also don't have the same access. And so can we tee that up for parents who might be living in poverty in urban situations? They can't drive their kids down into Utah County every day. So it's specifically for those in areas that have these distance or other complicating factors that keep them from access. We want to build a digital bridge, and there's kids that can do it. You know, I had a friend in high school at Orem High. I grew up. He was a tech whiz, and he wrote a program that the Department of Education used, picked up back in the 80s. He was a high school kid. Mm-hmm. Those kids with those brains are everywhere, right? So
right.
Whatever your interest is, I want to give you access to it. And hopefully they can stay here in the basin if they want, have the quality of life that they have out here in terms of a rural setting, fresh air, and have a job that's on the Wasatch Front. That's a new opportunity.
Here's the problem that I saw during the COVID time, and I think there's damage that happened to kids that didn't receive the instruction in the classroom,
yep.
Especially the younger kids that needed that classroom instruction. Mm-hmm. But you know, my grandkids that were going through this had parents that had the time and the ability to keep them focused on their studies. They're latchkey kids, just don't have that direction.
Right.
And so many of them went the whole school year without turning in an assignment, or some of them did. And they're the ones that are falling back and bringing the averages down.
By the way, what I'm talking about here is only for internships. So
I see.
So
I
not
see.
Not education.
I mean, it can't go too far was the point I was going to make.
No, that's exactly right. This should only be, I mean, you're going to class, you're getting your instruction here from a teacher because COVID was horrible. But when it comes to the kind of things like you might have a work release for an hour, right? Mm-hmm. And you might have a business here in town that you're interested in doing some kind of internship. That's what this is about. It's not anything other with education, because I think that's absolutely best in the classroom. But can you then give them a tap in with a teacher to a remote job shadowing opportunity? Because to your point, COVID is horrible in separating kids from their classmates and their teachers.
I want to move on. There's some other subjects in the limited time that we have available. I wanted to talk about teachers' pay and the discrepancy, or at least perceived discrepancy that I'm seeing between teachers' pay on the Wasatch Front and some of the more wealthy school districts, and school districts like in rural Utah, in remote rural Utah. Is there a discrepancy in teachers' pay?
There is, and it became wider during some recent salary wars, and so. By salary wars, I mean that we've had a teacher retention problem. We got people that are drifting out of the profession for a lot of reasons. One of them's pay. Another one's stress, feeling of lack of career growth opportunities. But yeah, that makes it tough. Right over in Wasatch, I mean, we're a little closer to the Wasatch Front, but it's gotten so expensive that teachers can't afford to live there. So right. So that's another limiting factor. You got, number one, access to enough teachers if you're in a rural setting. You don't have the same pay. And then you've got the problem of the cost of living that might interfere even if you got the good pay. So one thing the legislature started doing a few years ago is equalizing, and they take some money from the top financial well-off districts like Park City, and they redistribute some of that. So that does get spread around. But that's an ongoing question. Is that doing enough to support the rural areas? The other one is at-risk funding. And this is one that goes to those that have kids who are lower socioeconomic standard, English language learners. Some of that would apply in the rural areas. And the legislature had to refill that fund this year. It's got about $26, $27 million in that fund. And so that's an effort to help those that have at-risk students. And some of that money can go towards, you know, teacher pay. There's a high poverty teacher pay pool that's also available. Mm-hmm. So there are some things out there. But it's always a question of how can we do more to support those areas who are like those in the basin. So I think that's a priority for those of us that serve rural areas is you
teacher,
have to make sure
teacher pay discrepancies between rural and metropolitan areas. Have you been committed to that, and will you be committed to that going forward if reelected?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got to look at that in every way we can. Some of those are the pay itself. Others are the pipeline. So one of the things I've supported is the grow your own. So if you might have an aide, sometimes in the rural areas, you don't have a qualified teacher yet, certified teacher, but you have an aide. And mm-hmm. So one thing that was done, and I supported this, was to get payment to get the classes you need to become a certified teacher. So you can use those home-based people, potential teachers, and move them in there quickly and get past that financial burden that it takes to become a teacher. This year, the legislature also gave money for student teachers. And this is fun for me because my daughter happens to be a student teacher, or about to. She's mm-hmm. going to be an art teacher. And so she's in ed school. And I was able to tell her, hey, we're looking out for you. The legislature has a new bill that's going to pay to be, you know, a student teacher. And normally you're doing your student teaching on top of your regular classes. Sometimes they're carrying a job, right? So some of these are kind of in the grow your own vein. You got to equalize and pay more for the teachers.
Is that working?
It has. It's been a hugely successful program. The Grow Your Own has been around for a couple of years, been very successful. That's where you take an aide and you pay for what it takes to become a teacher. Mm-hmm. The paid student teacher was just this year. So that's brand new.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a new one.
So the jury's still out on that.
Yeah. But I will say, I mean, the state board always advocates for more support for teachers, more support, especially in those high needs areas like the rural areas. And the legislature's been responsive to that. So there's seems to be something new each year, but it's a constant discussion and a process of feeding back the information from those challenging areas.
Big subject on the minds of many here in the Uinta Basin is equity, diversity, and inclusion. Governor Cox signed a bill into law restricting bathroom access is one part of this. Did you support that?
Yes, 100%. We didn't actually get to vote on it, but I do fully support it. You know, you should be protecting girls. The Federal Department of Education has explicitly said that you need to accommodate kids who say that they are transgender or who are identifying as different than their biological sex. And they said in their own rules, you should not take into account accommodation for those who object on the grounds of privacy, meaning girls. And I thought that was horrible. That was the Federal Department of Education's specific statement. That's dead wrong. So the bill that says we protect girls, that's what we ought to be doing. We ought to be doing that in bathrooms. We ought to be doing it in sports.
And we have it?
Well, we have recently through some of these bills.
Okay.
Yeah, but that was necessary to counter the federal government's direction that didn't seem to care. It diminished the privacy concerns of girls and parents.
Not under this administration. They're pushing in the other direction.
Yeah, correct. The legislature has stepped into that and said, no, we're going to protect girls as much as we can. There's still debate on how strong those bills are or need to be, and it'll keep going on. But we've got to protect girls.
Well, there is a balance between respecting LGBTQ students, older students that really have the ability to identify, and causing gender confusion with other students and indoctrination from some teachers. What policies are in place here in Utah to prevent teachers from indoctrinating young kids and confusing them about gender identity?
Well, I'm happy to say that I wrote the only bill in the state that addresses that. So the legislature has addressed sports. They have addressed bathrooms. The classroom had not been addressed. And so when I was the new chair in 2023, that summer, I got some folks together. I got in local board members. I think Rick may have been a part of that discussion. I can't recall. USB members, legislators. And we discussed what's the problem and who's fixing it. And some of the local education agencies were tightening their policies. I felt that was a good step, but I felt we needed something at state level. So I wrote a new rule that said a teacher may not invite, suggest, or encourage a student to reconsider or change their sexual orientation or gender identity. And that had some vigorous debate. We had some opposition from some quarters, but we got it through at the end. I was able to, you know, persuade 10 of my fellow board members out of 15 to vote for that. So we put in the new state rule that went into effect in November, December last fall. So it's still new. Took a lot of months of discussion. We also said, and I will say this went into the rule that governs the standards of teacher conduct. So there are certain lines you don't cross. You don't embezzle. You don't beat up a kid. You don't have sexual relations with a student. And we added some things to that, including the rule I just mentioned.
And you don't try and persuade a young student without the parent's knowledge, even with the parent's knowledge.
Yeah,
you don't
right. Yeah. It's not your role.
Gender identity. No, it's
that's
not
right.
Your role.
You leave that to the parents.
If you're just joining us, I'm Steve Evans with News Talk KVL, and we're speaking with Jim Moss. James Moss was elected as the Utah School Board member. He's running as an incumbent for the school board position, and we're talking about our local schools and problems that we find with schools. What about books that are promoting political ideology or sexual identity of children? Or some of them are just darn right pornographic. What are your feelings about that? Can you comment on it?
Yeah. Well, again, as the incumbent, I feel like it's partly my job to share my feelings and then what I've done about it, right?
Right.
I mean, when you're up for your election, you got to say, did you do what you said you were going to do 4 years ago? So part of that new rule that covered discussions of gender fluidity was also a teacher cannot discuss any material that have been deemed to be sensitive materials crossing that line from the legislature's bill on pornographic books. There's a bright line test, three or four things that you do this, it's pornographic. And so we also added that. We also added that the teacher cannot use materials or symbols or discussion to promote a partisan agenda.
Should a Bible be in a school library? And two-part question. And should words that you can't use on radio be in books and literature in a school library?
Bible should be. It's part of our history. It's part of our literary history, our cultural history. You don't proselyte. The law is clear. You're not there to make a religious presentation, right, to persuade, but to discuss the history of civilization, the role the Bible played in that, the role it plays as
Bible is a
moral background, and it's the founding of our country, right? I discussed right. this as a poli-sci professor at UVU. Frankly, the kids found it fascinating. You talk about how God played a role in the political revolution of America, the idea that rights come from God and then are delegated in a limited extent to the government as opposed to being born as a subject of the king or queen, right? And as I present that, I say, look, folks, we're not going to Sunday school here, but I want to tell you the role that God played in the people claiming the right to delegate to the government and then to dial it back if they see fit, right, under the Declaration. So, yeah, that did play a very historically important role. But, you know, things that cross the line into pornographic material, that by law shouldn't be on the shelf. Our libraries need to do a better job in selecting books. You know, if you've got things there that are just full of kind of felt and this kind of stuff, it's not a pure First Amendment question. It is a limited topic that the schools, it's a limited forum, right? So the schools choose what to put in there. And I think they need to do a better job choosing those things that are productive and academically stimulating and not go off in that other direction.
We're running out of time. One quick response to this question, school vouchers, yes or no?
Yes, I got my political views from the person. We're on radio, so you can't
Ronald,
see the
Ronald Reagan. I have a poster.
You can't see the
from 1980 election. Ronald
so
Reagan.
I worked as a high schooler in the U.S. House of Representatives in 1986. Uh-huh. Ronald Reagan was the president. He was in favor of vouchers and closing down the Department of Education. That's where I got my political philosophy, and I still have it. So when vouchers came up, my second week as the chair of the board, I was told, "You better not be supporting vouchers, scholarships." As the chair of the state board, and I said, I'm supporting parents. I think they need the option. So that's where I stand.
Parental involvement in the school district. I mean, parent teachers association, sometimes you wonder where are the parents involved in it's a teachers association. It feels like a teachers association. Where the parents fit into that?
Parents.
What are your feelings about parents and education curriculum and concerns that they have with what's happening in the classroom? If I had a complaint, where would I go, and would it be heard?
Well, so first you go to the district, but I'll say part of that prior rule, it used to say if the parent reports to the district and the district takes action against the teacher, then they have to tell us about it. I changed that. I thought, you know what? We should know before they take action, and if they don't take action, then we should know about it. And our licensing division should take a second look. Most of our teachers are wonderful, but if you cross the line, if a parent brings a complaint, it's legitimate. We ought to know about it. So I changed that. That was a fight between us and the UEA. And I listened to them respectfully, but I said, we need this to be done so parents can know that if they report it somewhere, it's not going to go into a black hole. It's going to come to us. So we have new processes in place. I will just tell you, we had a report just yesterday that kids were acting as furries. This is this thing where you dress up as animals.
You what?
this is a new challenge and a new thing for parents. I think by the time this airs, your parents will know.
A furry.
They some of them, they dress up as cats or dogs.
And go to school.
And sometimes the allegation out there right now, we're investigating because you
they're
always have to get to the facts.
Identifying with a cat or a dog?
Identifying, but then also taking action. Sometimes spitting, biting, litter boxes. I mean, this is a...
Okay.
I kid you not. So
these kids are just making a statement.
Could be. But if they're biting, so there's some allegations. This is all out in the press, but the allegation is that they're biting and saying, well, I'm a cat, I'm gonna bite. That needs to be investigated. If it's disruptive to the classroom and learning environment. Exactly. So that's being investigated as we speak, and we'll be putting out a statement, we'll be following up. And the new rule that we have is that if an LEA does not properly respond, and we hope they do, then the Utah Board of Education can have investigators take a look at it ourselves as a backup. Checks and balances, I think, are appropriate. So that's one that's involving as we speak on the air here. And we want to make sure if the parents bring a complaint and it's investigated and found to be true, that there's something bad going on. it's corrected. And if the LEA doesn't take action, then we need to take action. So that's where I stand.
Jim Moss, I appreciate your candid answers to the questions. And I try to come up with questions that I think are on the minds of the average person here in the Uinta Basin. I appreciate you being here. And I've enjoyed our conversation. If I wanted to learn more about you, where would I go?
My website is mossforutahschools.com. That's Moss, the number for utahschools.com. So I do hope to have a second term here and keep working on these issues we've been talking about. There's a lot of concerns out there. My message is I had the same concerns. That's why I ran for chair. We've been working on it for the last year, but there's a lot more to do. So I would always appreciate your input. We want to make sure responding to parents and supporting teachers. There's some things I didn't quite mention there, but we got to support teachers with the pay and flexibility and know-how about what works. And they're doing wonderful work, and we got to back them up. So thank you. I greatly appreciate the conversation.
Our 25 minutes went by in a hurry, didn't it?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. James Moss Jr. is his official name. We call him Jim Moss. He was elected to the Utah School Board in 2020. He is our incumbent representative here in the Uinta Basin, and he is seeking re-election. So delegates, this is something for you to think about. We appreciate you joining us. If you didn't catch the whole interview, it will be posted online on basinnow.com. Look for the Meet the Candidate page under the Community tab there, and you'll find it. I'm Steve Evans with News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVL. Thanks for joining us.